Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Why do great leaders go off course, and how can they get back on track? Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here, and in just a minute, we're going to talk about leadership vertigo. But first, congratulations on being a lifelong learner and being proactive with your career. You're listening to the LeadX Show as you head out on your morning jog, or maybe you turn on the LeadX Show and you turn on your car for your morning commute. Any way you do it, you know LeadX will help you to stand out and get ahead. Please tell your friends at work that LeadX is the smartest way to start your day. And big thanks to all of you who last week subscribed to the LeadX Show on iTunes and left a short one or two sentence review. It only takes a minute to do it, but it's the single best favor you can do for me. And today's quick career tip is drink more water. Simple but not easy. Why am I talking about water? You already know about those 8 glasses a day. I'm saying you've got to drink even more than that, because water leads to higher levels of performance. When we wake up in the morning, we're already 1% dehydrated, and numerous studies show that even 1% dehydration begins to impair concentration, focus, creativity, and decision-making. We can't manage time, but we can manage our energy, focus, and attention, and it begins with rehydrating in the morning and drinking water throughout the day. Now, it always depends on body weight, but most people need to be drinking between 60 to 100 ounces of water a day. Some people fill up a gallon jug and just sip from it all day till it's empty. Myself, I've got one of those 32-ounce Nalgene water bottles. It's sitting right next to my coffee pot, so I certainly won't forget about it in the morning. I fill it up, throw some ice and lemons or something like that in it, and I bring it around all day long. Try it. Email me. Tell me if you don't feel more alert, less hungry. And yeah, you're going to run to the bathroom a few more times, but that's a bonus. You're going to get in a little cardio. So drink more water. Now, I'm excited for our guest today. He's been a friend for a while. He's been named by Inc. magazine as one of the top 100 leadership experts, ranked as one of the top 15 leadership bloggers in the world, and HR Examiner's top 25 online influencer in leadership. You may have already seen his work in places like Fast Company and The Globe and Mail. He's a keynote speaker, executive coach, and today we're going to talk to him about his book, Leadership Vertigo, Why Even the Best Leaders Go Off Course and How They Can Get Back on Track. Our guest is Tanvir Nasir. Tanvir, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kevin. It's good to be here. And you know, before we get in, I just have to comment on your thing about water. Before I got on the show, I was actually out doing exercise. So normally when I do these interviews, I have a cup of coffee, but I actually have my water bottle next to me. So I was trying so hard not to laugh. This is one of the few times I've done an interview where I actually have water instead of coffee next to me.
Good for you. And I find if I get my workout in the day, it's pretty easy for me to push a lot of water. I mean, you'll go through 32 ounces of water in 30 to 60 minutes of a workout. If I don't get my workout in, I'm a little less thirsty and it's harder to push that much water.
Exactly.
So, Tanvir, we're going to talk about leadership vertigo in just a minute, but I always start with the same question. And it's, you know, will you share a time with us when you failed, maybe early in your career, and what'd you learn from it? Because we want to learn from it too.
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I could think of one very vivid example. It was one of my first management positions where I was in charge of overseeing, I was in a biotech company and I was in charge of overseeing their numerous laboratory facilities. So in addition to supervising the laboratory staff that worked in the laboratories, I also was responsible for managing the cleaning crew to make sure that they were taken care of, making sure the lab equipment and the facilities were properly taken care of and restocked. Now, the cleaning crew, unlike the lab staff, are not coming from a scientific background like I do. So when I took on this job, I realized I wanted to make sure that they understood why we used certain equipment and so forth, you know, kind of to educate them and so forth. So I'd often go up to them and say, okay, look, we need more of these because we have this project. We're going to be using this device more, which means we need more of this type of glassware and so forth. So in my mind, I was thinking I'm helping them to understand why we need them to do stuff. And I mean, so that was the intent that I had behind right. this. So I would often go and say, look, we need more of this. We need more of this. I need you to do this. I need you to do that. So I thought, you know, okay, this is good. This is helping these people understand their function. Now, before I came to the company, they were under the direction of one of our senior directors. And he called me over one day into his office, and he and I got along really well. He was kind of like a mentor to me. And we started chit-chatting about my day. And he says, look, I have something difficult that I need to share with you. And that is that I've been getting complaints from some of the cleaning staff. I'm like thinking, okay, maybe some of the lab people are making a bit of a more mess than they're used to, and they're having to work more and so forth. I said, okay, well, what exactly is the problem? And they said, they're not happy with the way you talk to them. And I just like, almost, if I wasn't seated, I would have fallen on the floor, because I was like, wait, what? And I was just in, and he could tell from my state of shock. I'm like, I don't understand. What are we talking about? Like, it was like, you know, when that explosion, all you hear is that ringing in your ear. That's all I almost had. And so I said, well, okay, what exactly is it that I'm not communicating? And then the director just put his hand on his temple and said, okay, let me explain something here. And I realized, okay, I'm clearly not getting it. And he said, the problem is that they feel like you're coming in and you're always telling them what to do. Oh, I was a micromanager. And I was like, wait, I'm micromanaging them? And he goes, yeah, you are. And I'm like, but I don't understand how I'm doing this. And he says, well, you come in and you're telling them you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this, and then you leave. You never ask for their input. You're never asking them how that they're the processes. Maybe if I do it this way, you're not getting them involved. And I go, oh, so I should go then and I'll go talk to them and I'll explain to them and this, that, and the other. And then again, the little hand went on the temple and I went, okay, I better be quiet. And he said, I understand that you want to correct the situation, but the way you just said of how you're correcting it shows me the problem. You're too busy looking at the situation from your perspective. Mm. You're just said to me, I want to go explain to them what I am trying to do. What you need to do is take two steps back and get them to tell you what they need and want to do. And she says, just give it some time, give them space, let them come to you and slowly rebuild your relationship with them, because right now it's not good. So I said, all right, I'm going to hold off. I'm going to take it slow. So one of them came up to me and says, look, we're having a problem with this thing. Could we do this? And I went, oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. And they said, okay. It was a bit cautious. Then the second time someone else came and I was like, oh, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. Suddenly I realized it wasn't me coming up with, okay, this needs to be done, that needs to be done. They were the ones seeing it. They were seeing what was going on in the labs because they were spending more time in the labs than I was. I was in a lot of meetings. So they were on the front lines. They saw what needed to be done, but I was not showing them that I trusted their competence to know what needed to be done. And the minute I kind of took a step back and stopped talking and started listening was when they started sharing with me the insights. And suddenly I found things were operating so much more smoothly. And I actually didn't really talk that much with them because I realized they don't need me. They know what needs to be done. You know, if they have a problem, they'll come to me. They'll ask me, hey, I have an idea if we can do this better. They didn't need me to tell them what to do. And so that's the kind of thing where I learned in leadership, it's not about what you know. It's really about what it is that your employees know and giving them that space to share their insights instead of always going in there saying, okay, this is what we need to do. So that was really an eye-opening situation. And frankly, the only reason I was able to learn that was because I had this director who was a mentor who was willing to take that time out of his day to tell me and to catch me doing it right then and there and point out to me, see what you just did there. And then to guide me through the next step so I could repair that relationship. And honestly, it's something that even now I do look upon as being a failure, even though it ultimately became a success, because the people in that team were probably some of the nicest people I've ever worked with. Mm. So hearing that they felt that way about me really hurt, really stung. Not my ego, but that I was treating somebody who was that nice in such a disrespectful way. And so that lesson, it's probably been, what, maybe 15 years ago, it still stays with me. And I always use that to remind me to always make sure it's not about you. It's really about those you lead.
Yeah, great, great story, Tanvir. And LeadX listeners, I mean, what was amazing is it just shows, like, you know, Tanvir had the best of intentions. You know, like, let's put some context around this. The whole start with why, and you know, the purpose, and yet it was still, you know, overly directive. And I like, Tanvir, when you said, you know, you weren't giving them the space, you know, to take ownership and give their ideas. I thought that's great. And your book again is Leadership Vertigo, Why Even the Best Leaders Go Off Course and How They Can Get Back on Track. So let's start by, what do you mean by leadership vertigo?
Okay, well, leadership vertigo in a very succinct terms basically refers to a gap that exists. And I think my story I shared actually helps to illustrate that. It's that gap that exists between how you view your leadership and how your employees experience it. So you might be thinking, again, as you just said, Kevin, that you're going in there with those good intentions, you're trying to help your employees. But if you're only viewing it from inside your own head, you're not necessarily going to be aware of what's their experience and how it might be dramatically different from what you're actually hoping to achieve.
Makes a lot of sense. And so, you know, in the book, we obviously in a short format show, we can't go deep into this, but you say to avoid or cure, you know, leadership vertigo, your model has four principles. So can you summarize them for us?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there's four principles, leadership principles that are in the book of how we can overcome leadership vertigo. And they are build community, develop competence, earn credibility, and cultivate compassion. And we want to think of these as being these landmarks on your leadership landscape. They're the things you're going to use to help make sure you're, in fact, creating the kind of conditions your employees need to succeed and thrive under your leadership. So the first leadership principle, build community, is pretty straightforward in that it involves asking ourselves if we're creating an environment where our employees feel valued and that they understand why their work matters and the value it creates both for themselves and for those around them. And studies have shown that one of the core psychological needs we all have is relatedness, and that is that we all want to feel a sense of connection and belonging both to the people around us and to the work we do. The second leadership principle is develop competence. And competence here is not referring to our technical competence. Rather, it's referring to our emotional competence. By that, I mean it's talking about how are we showing up in those daily interactions with those we lead. Are we going into those meetings, into those conversations we have with our employees as we walk around a workplace with a genuine interest to learn and understand what they have to say? And how is our current emotional state coloring how we interpret and respond to what our employees are telling us? The third leadership principle, earn credibility, looks at something that we're seeing more and more in discussions about leadership today. And that is specifically how do we go about increasing our awareness, both of our own mental state as well as the realities of those around us. And what's critical to this principle is being open with our employees that we don't have all the answers, because only then can we free ourselves to be genuine about what it is that we're after, what it is that we need, and what we can actually provide them to be successful in their efforts. And the fourth and final leadership principle, cultivate compassion, looks at creating a workplace environment where we inspire and enable those around us to bring their best selves to the table because we have that focal point to ensure that we're not making our leadership about us, but about those under our care. And the importance of this has been demonstrated through numerous studies that have shown how organizations with that culture of compassion have not only higher levels of employee satisfaction, but they also have greater levels of employee commitment and personal accountability. And this has been found across a wide range of industries and fields. So if we take a look at those four leadership principles, it's ironic. The story you asked me about, I'm just thinking about how I replayed it. It shows really well how I was suffering in that moment from leadership vertigo. As I was just thinking through them, I just suddenly was, wow, that was a great segue. So that's the four leadership principles that we have.
And so let me touch on a couple of these things. And first of all, you know, what I liked when the way you talked about, you know, building community and make sure everybody feels valued. You know, I talk a lot about, you know, three keys to engagement being growth, recognition, and trust. And, you know, recognition, an easy way to hit that triggers, you know, by saying thank you, the kind of a classic and, you know, simple but effective way. But recognition, you know, really gets to that thing like I count, I feel valued, and not just by the boss, but by your peers. So I think it's great that that's like the first principle that you go with. And I do want to ask a question, Henry. When you talk about develop competence, and I'm glad you clarified, you know, for everyone that, you know, we're talking about your own kind of emotional competence, and are you genuinely interested in people around you? And I want to get your advice on this because, you know, some of my friends who are executive coaches, you know, they'll say that, you know, high performing leaders often will get dinged in the 360 surveys, you know, by their team members. And they'll say, you know, Kevin doesn't even know I exist. He's so rude. He walks past me in the hallway and doesn't even make eye contact and all the rest. Now, again, as part of my own vertigo, and I've gotten better over the, you know, recent years, but It wasn't that I was being rude or I didn't care about people, but I would rush down the hallway and I'm thinking about trying to get back for that next phone call or what's the next thing on my to-do list. And, you know, I'm a type A driver and I'm like, hey, I said good morning to that person in the morning. Why do I need to say anything now? And so it's hard. Like, I feel like it was a personality flaw trait that I had, that I was so driven that it didn't make me very interested in people's weekends or families or giving them a smile in the hallway. So, I mean, other than like deep work on the couch, like how do you coach someone like me to develop more emotional competence and to become more genuinely interested in others?
Well, I think one of the things we have to recognize is that, first of all, like, you know how you mentioned how I'll come into the office and I'll say good morning and so forth. One thing we have to recognize, as studies have shown, is that our emotions are very contagious and that our brains are hardwired to pick up those nonverbal cues that we give off before we even say a word, right? That's why they often show with babies how they're automatically drawn to faces. That's why a lot of the toys and stuff are faces. It's an animal face, it's a human face, and so forth, because that's what draws their attention and draws our attention from an early age. And so if we use that example of someone walking in the morning saying good morning, let's say on your way to work, right, if you're commuting, you have somebody who's cuts you off in traffic, or maybe there's someone on the train or on the bus who was particularly rude, and it just really sets your day off on the wrong foot. So you walk in the into your office, you know, it's polite, it's courtesy to say good morning. So you tell people good morning. While our words are saying good morning, our nonverbal cues are showing off that I'm not really happy right now.
Right.
I'm still processing that thing. And so what happens is people's brains, and this is a process that neuroscience has shown, it happens like instantaneously. We pick up on those nonverbal cues without us having a chance to process it. And they pick up that something is wrong. They don't know what it is, but you're telling them good morning. Right. So what's going on? There's a disconnect between the thing you're telling me and what I see on your face. And so this is where we get that notion of being disingenuous, because we'll say stuff like, oh, I told them this and I told them that, and they're not reacting the way I wanted to. Well, how was your emotional state in that moment? Were you really focused in that conversation? I was at a conference recently in Whistler, BC, and I remember having one conversation with someone. I went up and I started to ask them questions about their company, what they do, and so forth. I think the conversation lasted about 30 minutes. I probably spoke all of two.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really like, I asked them this and they started going on and on. I asked a second question just to whatever. And I realized after I left, like, I felt completely like that conversation. I don't know why the person left me with this bad, yeah. Like, I did not feel like I spent all this time. Why do I not feel good? And then I processed afterwards. The person was so caught up in themselves that I felt like they weren't acknowledging me. And this is something that actually, again, research studies have shown. If we get somebody to talk about themselves and their achievements for about 90 seconds, we're going to dramatically reduce their ability to take or consider the perspectives of others. So if we're not aware of that, how easily our brain can shift from focusing on others to simply focusing on ourselves, right? It's hard for people to feel that emotional connection. So when we're going in saying, okay, we need to do this, this, that, and the other, we're kind of checking off stuff on our to-do list, but if we're not really saying, here's the problems, what are the things that we could do to solve it? Now, we might have our list that we could be sitting there ticking it off in our head. One of the things I often tell people is, think of those drama shows. Every drama show out there right now has those serialized storylines, right? So it carries over episode to episode. How many of you watch the show with a certain checklist in your head of what's going to happen next? I'm not talking about mysteries. It could be a drama.
Right.
How many, I knew this was going to happen. And you feel that kind of satisfaction, right? And I said to him, it's because our brains are puzzle solvers. Our brain is hardwired to solve puzzles. So when we solve a puzzle, we get that endorphin rush. So I often tell people, like, look, instead of coming in trying to solve the puzzle, say to someone, this is the problem. Let them be the show that tries to solve it. And in your head, tick it off when they get something right. And you'll see how quickly it makes you feel good, even though they're the ones giving you the solution.
Right.
So that's why it's important when we talk about emotional competence that we're getting out of our head to see and understand the perspective of others. Because when we start training ourselves to do that, we're actually going to get that positive feedback internally because of how our brain is hardwired to have, I knew they were going to come up with that because that's what I thought of too. And they might even come up with, I did not see that coming. moments, which, again, that's that elation we have of being surprised.
Right. And listeners, again, just some repetition to anchor in your memories. You know, this is the, again, leadership vertigo. I've got plenty of these stories similar to what Tanvir started with, where, again, I didn't realize how people were experiencing my behaviors. And I wish I early on had this model described in the book, Leadership Vertigo, you know, build community, develop competence, earn credibility, cultivate compassion. And in the book, there's many, many specific things you can do to develop in these areas. So I encourage you to check that out. And Tanvir, with all the, you know, executive coaching work that you do and that you've done, what are some of the more common, you know, flaws, or what's the most common flaw or shortcoming you tend to see among leaders?
I think one of the things I've seen trip up leaders time and time again is that there's a false assumption that they're communicating enough to those they lead. In fact, just this week, a few days ago, okay, one of the leaders I'm working with told me how he didn't want to send too many emails to his regional employees because he has a lot of employees in different regional areas, because he figures they're already getting plenty of emails from their colleagues. So why bother filling their inbox with more emails? And like this leader, what they don't get is that your employees need to hear from you because you're the one providing them with the context for why certain decisions or choices are being made. I mean, if you get in your inbox a lot of emails from your colleagues, there's an email chain going on about something in product, and then the president or the CEO sends an email, we all know which is the one you're going to click on. And even if you don't, you're not checking your inbox at that moment. I've had that moment where I'm sitting at my desk writing, did you read what the president just sent? I'm like, no, I haven't had a chance. It makes its way throughout the thing because people are hungry for information. And the reason is because, unlike us who are in leadership positions, they don't have that long view out into the future informing them of what lies ahead and what we're hoping this will lead us to. So when you don't communicate regularly to those you lead, people are going to fill in the gaps with their own perceptions and ideas, which often might not be reflective of what's really going on. And consequently, we get this pushback because we're engendering this uncertainty because we're not making that time to communicate more to our employees of that, giving them that context as well as that clarity that's needed for them to understand why their contributions matter.
It's so funny you say that, Tanvir, because I've heard so many executives say, you know, that things are not going well in their organization, and they clam up and they say, well, you know, we can't tell them what's going on because it's going to freak everybody out and they're all going to start looking for other work. And I said, listen, whatever bad stuff's going on, by you being quiet, whatever they imagine is worse.
Yeah.
They're filling in the blanks with really nasty stuff.
Right. And they're on the front line, so they kind of see it. You know what I mean? Like, a good example is Sears. Right now, there's a ticking time for when they're going to fold, right?
Right.
So the people in charge at Sears might be thinking, oh, we can't really say anything because we don't want to freak out our employees. Oh, trust me, the people who work in the stores, they see it. They're walking around, they see empty shelves, they see the dwindling number of people coming into the stores. You're not going to be telling them anything they don't already know. But what they do want to know is, what are you doing about it? And yeah. So when we think, well, we don't want to freak people out, let's keep it in, let's not start the rumor mill going, the rumor mill will go. Because, again, this is one of the things, going back to the idea about emotional competence, our brain, because it's a puzzle solver, it likes to fill in those gaps. That's why when we're watching our TV show and that the reveal comes along where the character says something we thought they might say, I knew they were going to say that. Or then when they don't say it, we get that, oh, my God, I'm so surprised. It's because our brain can't help but watch and try to figure out the puzzle. So if you're not filling in those gaps, your employees' brains will, and sometimes that's not, they're going to fill it in with the wrong information. So when you do come with stuff, they might not be receptive to it because it's not reflective of what they see going on or what they're experiencing.
That's right. Now, Tanvir, before we wrap up, I always like to challenge our listeners to get like 1% better every single day, just a little bit better. So give us a challenge. You know, what can we do today to become a little bit better as a leader?
Well, I think one thing it's important, if I think about what we were talking about, it's that leadership is not about, it's not just about getting results, but it's about finding ways to inspire those you lead to be better. If you think, and I've done this exercise with so many people, if you think about that leader who you worked with years ago, who you still look upon back fondly, and you think, oh, I just really love working for that person, what were the things that was particularly noteworthy? Why is it so memorable? And often it's not the work, it's not the company environment, it's how that person challenged you to question what your full competencies are, what you could truly achieve, because they believed you could do more. And that drive that someone believes in you is a powerful force where we're trying to encourage people, not to help the bottom line. It's not like, okay, well, let's just tell people that we want to aspire to be better so you can help us move up a few notches on this quarter or right. the whatever report we're putting out. Rather, what we want to be doing is showing people that we want them to succeed and thrive because we realize that we're part of their career journey. They're not going to be with us their whole career. That's not the new reality. But we do want that as they move forward, we're helping them to build that foundation that is going to lead to their successes in the future so that, like we do, they're going to look back over their shoulder and remember how we believed in them and we inspired them because we weren't just looking at them to help us get the results, but we were looking at how can I inspire the best in you and to really see you bring your full efforts to whatever it is you're contributing to.
Great challenge. So Tandra, I want to thank you for coming on to the LeadX show. And will you tell our listeners how they can find out more about you and your great work?
Oh, the best place to go would be my website. It's tanvernasir.com, TanverNasir.com. I have all my leadership articles that I've written there. I've been writing for almost 10 years. So there's a huge repository of leadership insights. Like Kevin, I do a leadership podcast as well called Leadership Biz Cafe that you can find on iTunes, on Google Play, and on Stitcher Radio. But go to my website and you can find all that great stuff there as well as to learn more about my book.
Fantastic. All right, friends, you've just been mentored by leadership guru Tanvir Nasir. Don't forget you can get all of the links he just mentioned and the notes from this interview over at leadx.org, and you can get Tanvir's book from amazon.com or your favorite bookstore. And while that's it for today's episode of the LeadX show, don't forget to download our free ebook, Richard Branson's 7 Secrets to Leadership, at leadx.org/Branson. And until next time, remember, of course, I'm always reminding you, leadership is not a choice, because leadership isn't about power or authority. It's about influence. And you influence people with your words, but also your silence, your actions, and when you choose to be a bystander, you're influencing people whether you want to be or not. We are all leaders. Today, please lead with intent.